Welcome to the Pussy Parlor Podcast. I am your host, Kitty Velour. I am a pole dance artist, glittery showgirl, and a pole dance and floor work instructor. Here at the parlor, I interview new guests each week, including pole dancers, strippers, showgirls, sex workers, and cabaret creatures of all kinds. Our parlor guest for today is Polyantha, a burlesque artist, pole dancer, and fire performer, originally from the northeast of England, now living in London. Inspired by a mashup of 50s pin-up culture and 80s glam metal, the Sunset Stripteaser. In today's episode, we talk about pole dancing in rock bars, navigating the shadow ban on Instagram, and Polyantha's 80s metal inspirations on her aesthetic. Welcome to the Pussy Parlor, Polyantha.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you for being on the podcast. So for people that don't know who you are, how would you describe yourself and what you do?
So I'm a performer based in London. I'm multi-skilled, I guess you could say. I do burlesque, pole dance, fire performance, which I'm just getting kind of started in. I do go-go dance. A bit of everything, basically. Originally, I'm from the Northeast, but I moved to London a few years ago, and it's really just amplified my love for performing even more.
Amazing. Yeah, you do so many different performance disciplines. How did that all start? What was the first thing that got you into performing?
So the first thing, I'm a trained dancer. I've been dancing since I was two, in ballet, contemporary, a bit of everything, breakdance even. And when I was 16, I ended up having to go and do my A-levels and go into what I would call a normal job. But I've always had dancing on the side. So when I hit 18, I discovered burlesque. That was my first route into the performing world as I'm in now. And then it kind of just progressed from there. I'd fallen in love with watching pole dancing. And so I'd gone to learn that. And same with fire, I've gone on to learn that. So yeah, burlesque was really my first performance love, you could say.
Do you remember your first burlesque show?
Yes, I do. It was in Newcastle. There's quite a big burlesque scene in Newcastle. And I had practically begged somebody to let me on their show because I had no experience. I had no idea what I was doing. I'd bought a really nice, long satin red dress, and it was all traditional burlesque style. It was all really classical, something like what you would see, well, what I hoped I was going to be the next Dieter. So I had on really classic 50s pinup look, and it was terrible. Now I look back, it was just awful. But it was in like a little bar in Newcastle, a really small crowd. It was such a nice show, and it sparked off my love for it straight away. But yeah, now I look back, it was I'm glad nobody filmed it. Let's just put it that way.
I think when you first start getting into performing, it's hard to find that aesthetic, and styling itself is a skill, putting together an outfit, making it look really polished. So I think at the beginning, it's always a little bit of a struggle, or you think you look really good at the beginning, but then in retrospect, you're like, wow, that was not it.
Yeah. I mean, you just keep elevating everything. I think that's part of being a performer. You always are striving to do better. But yeah, I look back, I thought I looked amazing on the night, but nah.
And from there, what made you decide to pursue that kind of path career-wise?
I absolutely loved it. I think that was the main thing. I just fell in love with it from the get-go, and I was like, it's a completely different kind of crowd to what you would get at a normal dance show. You've got whooping, you've got cheers, you've got everybody just having a great time. Everyone's got smiles on their faces, and it's the energy from a burlesque show that you get, or, you know, later on from pole shows that I've got. It's just a community feel, and yeah, it's amazing. So I wanted to continue that because I was like, wow, this is a whole different world. It's a whole new world. And I knew that I could do it on top of my university work at the time. And it's something I would be able to take anywhere in the UK because there's a scene for it absolutely anywhere. So yeah, it was like an adventure.
And how did you balance that with your studies at university?
It was difficult. It was really hard. I ended up doing a lot less while I was at university, but I spent the time because I actually did lingerie design at university. So I actually spent the time bettering my skills so I could make better burlesque costumes. I'm a very like from scratch person. I'm very proud in saying, oh, I've made this whole costume from complete scratch. So to be able to have the actual skills taught to me to do that, that went hand in hand with my performance. So I spent a lot of time costuming and not very much time performing. But yeah, it paid off in the end.
Yeah, a lot of work goes into creating and constructing the outfits. How did you develop your aesthetic? Because you make all like lots of your own stuff. How did you know what style that you wanted to go for?
It's basically an elevated version of myself. I think with the leopard print, I'm always wearing animal print. I'm wearing animal print right now. Mainly leopard print and like neon pink and red. That's all. I love that kind of stuff. My house is filled with pink neon signs. So it's my personality, but elevated to a almost showgirl standard. So I'm in love with 80s glam metal as well, 80s hair metal. It all fits into that. So when I eventually started honing my actual character and developing Polyantha as more of a brand, all of that came together and it just made sense to me, finally. You know, I did away with the traditional red satin dress because it just wasn't me at the end of the day. So I just concentrated, I'm going to do something that I absolutely love. So everything from that moment onwards, I've just made into something that's so me. And yeah, that I guess that's how it developed.
And I'm sure some of our listeners would love to hear about what kind of acts that you do, like what outfits, if you could describe it to them so they can visualize what you put on stage.
Okay, so I do mix kind of a traditional pinup look. So taking a bit from the traditional kind of burlesque look, but also with my 80s hair metal thing. So one of my favorite outfits is my act that is called Bed of Nails, where I do a bit of a burlesque striptease and then it finishes with me lying on a bed of nails and doing a couple of poses. And I made that outfit from absolute scratch, as I said. Very proud of that. It is a corset with a very plunging neckline in like a kind of wet look snake print, I guess. And then like a skirt that matches, a feather in the hair. It's currently getting an upgrade. It's going to be covered in rhinestones. So it's still quite traditional in the aspect that it's a corset that looks like a dress, but it is very animally and out there and, you know, leathery looking 80s.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about how you got into doing Bed of Nails, like that sort of act, because it comes under Freak Show or Sideshow, doesn't it, mm-hmm. A little bit more. How did you practice for that? How did you get into that?
So anyone that teaches Sideshow, I'm really, really sorry because you're going to hate me. Basically, what happened there is I heard the song by Alice Cooper, Bed of Nails, and it's a really 80s track. I absolutely love it. And I was like, wouldn't it be great if I could just get on a bed of nails in the act? So that's where I came up with the idea. And I had to sit down and think, right, how am I going to do this? Because at the time, I actually wasn't aware that there was any teachers that taught Sideshow and Bed of Nails. Now I am aware, and I suggest that you go to them if you want to try it. But at the time, I sat down and I was like, right, I'm going to go to B&Q. I'm going to get the stuff and I'm going to make it. So I took a week off work, went to B&Q, had no idea what I was doing, got some wood, got some nails, had a rough idea from looking up stuff online and just made it. And that was my first experience with a bed of nails. I just made it. And then I was like, right, well, I guess I have to lie on it. So,
oh my God.
I don't recommend anyone does that, but that is how I did it. And obviously now after more and more practice, I know how to do it safely, but yes, I do recommend you go to some fabulous teachers. I think there's quite a few that kind of do workshops around the UK that do Sideshow. So yeah.
Yeah, Sideshow and Freak Show are kind of an off branch off of kind of the circus cabaret world. And yeah, I guess there's a lot of safety kind of stuff that you need to know before doing something like that. I can't believe you made it though. So you nailed all of those in?
Yeah, I did. I think there's 297 nails in there.
Whoa.
And it's only a tiny one because I'm only a tiny person. So it's literally the size of my torso. It's really small, but it took me, I think, 2 days to make.
Oh my gosh. And does it hurt when you lie on it?
Yes.
It does. Does it? Yeah. It does. Does it pierce your skin?
No, it doesn't pierce, but it does bruise me. I bruise like a peach, but it does. I get like little rows of dots from where I've laid on them.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that is 100% a skill. And stuff like that is really amazing in a show to watch because it's just always that kind of shock value. And when you're watching something like that, you can't not be engaged with that. When did pole dancing come into your repertoire? How did that start?
So I have, again, always been in love with the idea of it since I was really young. I remember seeing like strippers on TV and stuff being like, wow, that is absolutely amazing. One day I'd love to do that. But there was nowhere really that I was aware of around my hometown that did classes or you had to be 18. So I kind of just held off. And then when I got to university, they started a pole society the same year. So I was like, right, okay, this is it. So I went to weekly classes in Leicester and just started learning. And yeah, again, fell in love with it from the get-go. Couldn't believe that my body was able to do these moves and naturally progressed into performing it because it's, again, something I absolutely love. And yeah, still love it now. Still going.
Yeah, I think pole fits in quite well with the whole like stripper 80s kind of thing, neon. Mm-hmm. I love neon as well. I have loads of neon signs in my flat. Yeah. I find something quite calming about neon. I don't know. It just kind of reminds me of carnivals and fairgrounds and strippers. And it just gives me that happy feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's exactly the same for me. And especially with, you know, my love for the 80s and the Sunset Strip. All I think about is like those neon signs. I've never been to the Sunset Strip, but that's what I imagine it would look like. Yeah, and it just reminds me of just showbiz. I don't know why. It just makes you think of pizzazz. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's very, yeah, very symbolic of the performance cabaret world. I think it's quite an Americanized kind of thing that we've kind of taken on, but yeah, neon forever. Do you have any favorite performances that you've done? Any good memories and stories?
I do. I mean, my favorite show ever to do is one called Bad to the Bone Burlesque, which is based in London. It used to be based at the Big Red, if anyone's ever been to that, which is a rock bar. It's like a really gritty dive Americana kind of bar. So I felt right at home there. Also neon signs above the stage, so perfect. So that is the kind of crowd, because it's like a rock-loving crowd as well. Those shows really mean a lot to me. All of the performers there are like rock and roll burlesque, rock and roll pole, metal kind of performers. So I really do feel at home there. And just the energy that comes back from the crowd while I'm performing there is just something really special to me. So I had a residency there. Hopefully we'll be coming back when things go back to normal in a new venue because the Big Red is sadly gone now. But that, just all of the shows that I've done there, I can't even pinpoint one of them. They were just absolutely amazing. And, you know, even though my acts may not have gone to plan on the night, it's just the whole vibe of the community and just the love of rock. Sound like Jack Black in School of Rock, but the love of rock. That's what made it special to me. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. I think a good venue really makes a difference as well, especially when you get to know that venue and it feels, you get to know the stage and the people. Mm-hmm. The audience is something so important to you performing that we're all missing right now, that audience energy. So yeah, I totally get that. You wear a lot of amazing outfits on your Instagram, like lots of latex and just really cool stuff. How do you put ideas together for photo shoots? What's the process behind that?
Oh, that's a good one. I feel like I haven't done any shoots in forever because of the pandemic. But when I am shooting, I usually just do collaborations now with photographers and, you know, makeup artists because I don't have much time to shoot. So it's when I do shoot, it's something that I really, really want to do. And it's usually a combined effort between myself and the photographer. And we'll like bounce back ideas with each other to say we really want to shoot something that looks kind of cyberpunky and like really neon, or we really want to shoot something that looks traditional pinup. So one of the latest shoots I did was with Salacious Photography. He was quite a new photographer and it was like a boudoir kind of shoot. And I just had this one really nice vintage 80s lace bodysuit, like teddy kind of thing. And I was like, I just really want to shoot that. I really want to shoot that in like an 80s setting with some records dotted around. And she was like, yeah, perfect. I'd love to do that kind of thing. So it just develops quite organically usually. And, you know, when you're on shoot sometimes as well, I'll just bring a bunch of outfits that I like in case we get time to shoot any extras. And then we'll just kind of work from there. We'll see what we both like and go ahead with it. So I think it's less, for myself, it's less planned outfits and it's more kind of chaotic and like, oh, we think that'll look good on that background. Let's just shoot that really quick. So yeah, that's the way that I work.
More kind of go with the flow, have all your options ready and just see what you're feeling in the moment.
Yeah. I mean, my flat is just full with outfits that get worn once for shoots and just stuff that I've collected that I definitely don't need. And my partner's sick of it because we've got an underbed storage and a wardrobe and some drawers and they're all full of my crap. But yes, I've just got loads of stuff that I've always got there ready to shoot.
Yeah, that is the struggle of the showgirl life, is just all of the accumulated outfits. Mine is shoes. I just have so many pairs of stripper shoes and I don't have room for them all. They're kind of scattered around. Some of my old ones as well that are broken, but they just are like really cool and have really nice designs on them. I just keep them as well. So I have a sort of graveyard of stripper shoes going on and it's getting a little bit out of control.
Yeah, living in a studio flat in London with so many costumes and everything, it's not ideal. I don't recommend it.
No. You did a bit of go-go pole at Cyberdog. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what Cyberdog is for anyone who doesn't know?
Yes. So that was my part-time thing before the pandemic, which I did most weekends. Basically, Cyberdog is a rave kind of raveware shop in the heart of Camden in London. And as you walk up to it, just to visualize, it's got gigantic robots at the entrance and the whole shop is like a nightclub, basically. As you walk in, there's podium dancers kind of on the top, on like elevated on platforms. And I actually work in the sex shop, which is down at the bottom. So you go down the shop through round and down. And there's a pole. So every Saturday I would dance for about a 4-hour shift, just go-go and pole in the corner, kind of entertaining customers. And I absolutely adore that job. It's something that you never really see when you go out shopping. So for me, like seeing people's shocked faces coming, because there's a staircase that is opposite the pole, seeing people coming down the stairs and being like, oh my God, there's a pole dancer. So yeah, it's like the shock value of that job I love. And I just get to be myself there. It's not strictly performing as you would plan for a performance on stage, you know, doing an act. It's really organic, improvised performing. So whatever I'm feeling that day, I can say to the staff, could I have some slower songs because I'm really tired? Or could I have some fast songs? I'm feeling really high energy today. And I'll just perform how I feel on that day. So it's really special to me.
Yeah, I think it's a really fun place to go. And that kind of performance, more go-go or more kind of ambient, I guess you have to pace yourself because you can't dance flat out for 4 hours on the pole. So how do you structure that so you don't wear yourself out?
Yeah, that's really important. So I do 4 hours and it's half hour sets. And anybody that has danced on stage before ever will know that anything above 2 minutes, you're already knackered. So to do even half an hour is really hard. I just make sure that I thoroughly warm up and I maybe do pull out some tricks, but I will pull them out like every 5 to 10 minutes. So I'm not going to be climbing the pole, going upside down, inverting, doing like a jade split and doing loads of tricks every, you know, the whole duration of the set. I'm going to be doing some slow dancing on the floor, some floor work, you know, just basically going as slow as I can to the music and just listening to my body. That's the most important thing with performing, that you listen to your body. And if I'm feeling that I'm tired, I'm just not even going to climb the pole. I'm just going to go do some kind of go-go moves. And yeah, the main thing is just entertaining and still engaging with your audience. And as long as you're having a good time, the audience having a good time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think people don't realize how strenuous pole is. And sometimes people want pole dance sets for 20 minutes, half an hour. And I'm just like, that is not, that's not going to happen. It's not possible to dance at full pelt for that long. I mean, as you said, 2 minutes really, and you're knackered. Yeah. So 5 minute set, you know, is normally enough. But I think of go-go as kind of like dancing, but like ambient kind of background dancing where you pace yourself. I don't know. How would you describe go-go?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description of it. It's kind of, it's almost like, you're just, yeah, I think you've put it.
Yeah, you're
well
just kind of like bopping
it's really
along.
Hard to explain. Yeah, bopping along, listening to the music, but you're not going full out. You're doing a few almost little music video dance moves in there.
Yeah.
With the pole next to you.
Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, posing a little bit with the pole, but not going full pelt because that is just too tiring. Yeah. I would love to take us into the love, learn and dream section of the podcast, which is three questions that I ask all of my guests. What do you love most about your job?
I think I've said this earlier, but it's definitely the entertaining the audience part. It's seeing the look on people's faces. It's seeing people's reactions, feeding off them, the adrenaline that runs through you as well when you are on stage and there's a live audience there. It's like no other feeling in the world to me. That is like, yeah. So that is the most important thing. Sharing my art with other people, that's very important to me as well, especially now I've kind of found my brand and I've got acts and a repertoire that I really love. And I've put so much work into creating those acts to share them with people. So yeah, the audience, that's the most important part. That's the bit I love the most.
What is the biggest lesson you've learned along your journey?
Ooh, this is a big one, and I'm still trying to tell myself this every day, but do not compare yourself to other people. As a performer, it's so easy to do. If you've performed at all, you'll know that even stood backstage, you're thinking, oh, everyone looks amazing. Oh God, am I good enough? And it's a bit of imposter syndrome as well that comes through. And I've struggled with that for a number of years, as a lot of people do. But it's so important to not compare yourself to other people. Believe in your brand and believe that you have something special and you're valid and you have something to show as well as everybody else, if that makes sense.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I say that all the time as well. Comparison is the thief of joy. But it's a lot easier said than done. I think it's something that you always have to continue working on. And that's why I do quite like cabaret variety shows, because everyone's doing a different kind of discipline. So sometimes you don't feel like you're comparing yourself as much, because you might be the only pole dancer and someone else is doing drag or singing or circus. So I feel like that kind of helps with that. But when I do a pole show where it's all pole dancers, I feel like the audience is going to have a much more critical eye. So it makes me a lot more stressed in those kind of environments. I don't know if you find that with different types of shows.
Yeah, completely. I definitely prefer variety shows as well, just for the fact that you get to meet so many different kinds of people as well, and you get to learn about their art. But yes, I definitely agree. It's even hard. I mean, most people will experience this just looking at Instagram and in your normal life, and you look at people's photos and you're happy for them, but at the same time it makes you feel a bit ooh. So I think it's an important life lesson, even not just don't compare yourself to others if you can help it, and just believe that you're valid and you're enough.
Yeah. I'm going to deviate slightly to, because you mentioned about social media, and I saw you post recently about struggling with engagement because of the shadow ban. And I've definitely felt that for quite a long time. Like, my engagement has just been shit. Yeah. I feel like no one really comments or communicates with me that much through my posts. Where I know it definitely didn't used to be like that a few years ago, because you used to have a lot more freedom about what you could post. Whereas now I feel like anything too raunchy, too much skin is often taken down, or I don't really use hashtags as much as I used to because I don't know if they work or not anymore. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to navigate, isn't it? How do you deal with that online?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. As I think I posted about it even yesterday, just saying, it's really hard to put into words for somebody that doesn't experience it. But the thing is, if you show any kind of skin whatsoever, so especially marginalized groups of people, unfortunately, are affected even worse. So you've got to try and navigate your content. So my art, for example, I might want to post a lingerie photo shoot picture. If I post that, it's probably not going to get much reach. I do still try and use hashtags, but I think that's what gets me banned. I think hashtags are monitored, and as soon as they see you hashtag something, they'll just kind of mute your reach as such. So there's not really a way that I try and navigate it. I do still post what I want to post, but we're all at danger of being deleted and losing our following. Even with the introduction of TikTok, I think that's where things have started to get really tight, especially on Instagram. I think they're trying to mirror what TikTok are doing and making it like safe for children as such, even though a closed body is safe for children. I don't think there's really a way that I'm getting around it at the moment. I just keep asking my followers to support the artists that they love and try and keep sharing their content and interacting, because at the end of the day, that means jobs for people. Unfortunately, if you've got a bigger social media presence, that does mean you're more likely to get a job. And for those people that rely on performing as an income, that's really important to them. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a difficult topic, and Instagram don't really tell you if something, what it is that they don't like exactly. So we're all kind of guessing, or it might be this, it might be that. And I do find as well, sometimes I have a video that does really well, but if it has twerking in it or anything like that, if it gets seen more, then it can get deleted. So if it's a popular post, but if it's not as a popular post, then it won't.
Yeah, it kind of goes under the radar.
Yeah, which is really frustrating, because we put so much work into our content, and then for it to just get deleted is really heartbreaking. I think I had my WAP routine deleted because, I don't know, it was just, I guess, a lot of bum, but it was one of the more successful posts that I'd put out. So it was just really annoying to, just have it taken away. I do feel like I've had to censor myself as well. I don't know if you felt like that, but when I look back at some of my older posts from years ago, I definitely was just like going for it a bit more. Whereas now I'm a bit like, oh, I can't do this. I can't touch myself like that because it will probably get flagged. So it's kind of shit that we have to censor our art to kind of play this game with Instagram.
Yeah. And it's not like you can just come off social media, because it's so important. That's the reason people find you these days. You can't afford to just take your work away from social media or just post infrequently. Social media is everything nowadays. So to censor your art that you're trying to let reach people, it really doesn't make sense. It's really hard to balance.
Yeah, for sure. If it's any consolation, I think your Instagram feed looks amazing and very polished and fabulous and colourful.
Thank you.
And for any of our listeners as well, if you want to support us, just try to like, comment, share our posts as much as you can, because that really helps us out to get more visibility, because we've been working on our Instagrams, our social media platforms for many, many years to create this content for all of you. So give us some love. And taking us back into the last question of the trio, the dream question. In a world where you had unlimited budget, unlimited access to any venue or place, and no health or safety restrictions, what would you do in a dream routine?
Right. Let me think.
It's a big question.
Yeah. I mean, am I allowed to hire Motley Crue?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay, great. My dream, I guess my dream job actually, but my dream show / routine / whatever would be to dance on stage with some of my favorite bands. I've danced on stage with some bands before, but just after seeing Motley Crue and their backup dancers, singers, when I was younger, I was like, that is what I want to do. So I'd have Motley Crue, a large stadium show, and I'd have me on a pole in the middle. And I'd have the most amazing outfit, probably some kind of leather studded rhinestoned getup that I could strip out of, some really, really tall 8-inch heels. And yeah, that would be great. That would be my dream show, I think.
That would be epic. I think dancing on a stage with a band is such a vibe.
I would love that. Yeah, I think that would be my dream one. I mean, other than dream shows that are maybe achievable, who knows? I'd love to perform at like the likes of Download Festival or Bloodstock Festival, because that's kind of the next best thing to performing with bands. And I'd also love to perform at some more fetish events like Torture Garden. I'd love to do that in the future. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, you could totally do that. Absolutely. This has been really cool talking to you. Where can we find you online?
Oh, everywhere. You can find me on Instagram if I'm not shadow banned. That would be Polyantha. I'm also on Twitter, and I'm going to be launching, hopefully, a Big Cartel site soon for some prints and maybe more t-shirts, because I've just had a first run of t-shirts. So, yeah. And I'm also on OnlyFans. That's at Polyantha as well.
Fabulous. I'm going to link all of these things in the show notes so people can find it there. Go and follow Polyantha on all of the places. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you. It's been lovely. It's been really nice.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in, and we will see you in the next one. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today at the Pussy Parlor. If you're left wanting more, we have extra pussy episodes on Patreon, where you get extended interviews with bonus questions. Just search for Kitty Velour Patreon. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at the Pussy Parlor. That's pussy with an X, PXSSY, because we're not allowed the word pussy on Instagram. The tragedy. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. It really helps support the pod. I'll be back next week with a brand new guest. Stay filthy and stay fabulous. See you soon.